Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here. Getaway Friday, July the 10th, 2026. 16 minutes past the hour. Joined in studio by Matt Morgan. You got to bring some WD-40 for that charity.
Yeah, I know.
You always forget it. You got to make a note to yourself. It would help so much. Nobody would know you were over there. It'd be great.
Well, I mean, you know, every time you move in the chair just creaks.
So. It does. Phone lines are open. 740-383-9944. If you have anything you'd like to say in regard to anything we've been talking about this morning, we would love to hear from you. But I do think Marion is all about, it's an attitude. I think it's, I don't know if it really has to do with money or two sides to town and the uppers and the ones who don't have. I'm not sure that that's a thing.
Off topic, but
is this? Do you want to answer that?
Is this? Well, I mean, I'll answer this, but I just happened to look over and I you know, Larry Barnett was American League umpire. Is there still such a thing as the American League, or did they merge?
No, they're still there. American League, National League, so but they do play each other more often.
Is it just like conferences?
Yeah.
Like how there's the NFC in you know, football, and then the.
Yeah, but they didn't used to play each other. Now they do.
Okay.
I think that's how the season got longer. You know what I got this week? Business cards.
So what was the question, by the way?
The upper and the lower crust.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Of Marion.
I don't know. I've never had the experience. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I can't speak for anybody else, but not well, something I've... You know.
If you have any thoughts, 740-383-9944. Anyway, Terry Tackett showed up at Kroger this week, and apparently I have a lot of business cards, so I can really be busy, because look at all these.
Can I have one?
You want a business card?
Let me get a business.
My goodness. Are you going to contact me for something? There's a lot of them in here. I don't know how many you think are in there?
Oh, lot.
500 probably, don't you think?
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's, you know, quite a few.
Now, it's kind of nice because it says WGH Talk Radio, Marion's Talking Place. Join the conversation. It's got a microphone on it. It's got my name as program director. It's got the office phone number, and it's got my email on there.
QR code. You've got a QR code.
Hit the QR code. See what happens.
That's what I want.
All right. Let's see what the QR... They're blue, by the way.
All right.
I've got the... What happens when you hit the business card? Or the QR code?
It automatically wants to make you a contact in my phone.
Oh, that's good!
So I got your name, the station's phone number, I guess, and your email.
These are nice!
And I could hit save, I suppose, but...
So it loads, it's like, hey, how do I contact you? I just give you a business card, you hit the QR code.
You honestly don't even need the business card. Just scan the thing, and you have all of the contact information.
Boy, we are.
You could have had one of these.
And people think
just
we're...
just said scan the card.
Well, clearly we are the high end of Marion around here. Oh, you can have that. You can have a business card. Yeah, put that in your memorabilia. But I've got business cards
now.
You
gotta sign it. It'll be worth a billion dollars at some point.
This is like my baseball card. My business card. All right, 740-383-9944. But I don't know where this idea came from, or I'll never carry these around. There'll still be 500 business cards laying in this box here in the studio.
You gotta carry like 10 of them around.
Well, people do ask, how do I get in touch with you?
Yeah.
So I guess this is the way you do it.
10 of them. Just carry like 10 of them. You never need more than 10.
All right. Business cards are crucial. 740-383-9944. All right. Feel free to give me a buzz. We can discuss whatever's on your mind. Now, so we've done the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce wedding. And we've done the... what are you doing?
So I just noticed that I thought this was a sticker. They just like glued or taped one of the cards on here. So the box is full of cards, and they just taped a card onto the box.
Well, I think with 500, they could probably spare one to put on the front there.
Anyway, so
all you gotta do is scan the QR code. All I gotta do is keep one. In any event, here we are. 740-383-9944. Okay, so, well, it's interesting that Graham Plattner has gotten out of the race, Maine's Senate race. He got out kind of defiantly, though. He didn't want to get out. He says this doesn't mean that let's take the phone call. We'll come back to this. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, question for Matt.
Yes.
He said that he listens to the Beatles, but he doesn't listen to Paul McCartney much. How do you listen to the Beatles and not listen to Paul McCartney?
Well, I guess let me read, because, Paul McCartney makes, music under Paul McCartney.
Well, I know. He went solo. I get that.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of.
Well,
You've met me, Matt.
I suppose it's more like I listen to the Beatles. I mean, the only song I know written by Paul McCartney, and released by him is the Christmas song he has. And I honestly don't know that I know any of Wings.
Have you ever watched any of the James Bond movies?
I don't think so.
You ever seen Live and Let Die? One of the James Bond movies?
No.
Look it up. Listen to the song. He scored that movie.
Like Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die.
Oh, that song's in Shrek.
I know you've heard it.
That song's in Shrek.
Well, okay, it could be on. I'm probably in Shrek. Shrek's got everything. Come on,
Shrek
man.
Does have everything.
We're not going to use the Shrek effect to debunk.
Oh, no, Shrek's a great movie, great franchise. They're making another one, I think.
No, it is. Everything has its place, but I was just, as I said, you kind of can't listen to the Beatles without McCartney, The Beatles, that was the whole thing, I think, I'm pretty sure, is that McCartney wanted out, so he destroyed the Beatles
because
they didn't go on without him,
I think there was a bit more, because I know that Lennon also said he wanted out before, obviously he was assassinated.
Oh, yeah.
Their manager died and, a few other things. I mean, it was just, not a great time, so they were just like, well, I think we wrap it up.
Yeah, I remember it because I grew up in it, and I remember the girls that loved the Beatles, and how they were so mad at Paul McCartney for breaking the Beatles up, and then the other fans were mad at, who was the other one? I can't think of his name.
Yoko Ono. Lennon.
Yeah, Lennon. They were mad at Lennon and Yoko Ono issues and all of that, So, yeah, it was a blame game, but like I said, the public took it, a lot of the public took it as, Paul McCartney leaving was what destroyed the Beatles, because I think Paul and Lennon wrote, 90% of their music?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Something like that. But, and on the, the different sides of town or however you want to call it, when I grew up, there was Baker Middle School, there was Edison Middle School, and there was Taft Middle School. And Baker Middle School was the upper income, upper middle class. Edison was kind of the middle class. And I'm probably going to take heat for this, but, Taft was, it wasn't low class, it wasn't poor or anything, but it was just the slightly less than middle class. We'll say it like that. And I think you had, Fair Park and Colonial Acres and Oakland Heights and all that. You had a certain income level, and it was they were very solid blue collar communities. And because Marion was a very solid blue collar town back then. And then on the east side of town, when you got over by, when you got like Naomi said, if you stayed kind of south of Center Street or south of the tracks right there, and then you went east of Main Street, the income levels got a little higher. There was a little more college education. There was, so things like that.
Right, but don't you have to feel that way for it to be true? Because I was thinking, most people who you meet in life, your coworkers, your friends, your family, They don't always necessarily know where you live, especially in a class system. So wouldn't that be something you would have to feel internally? I mean, I've never seen somebody walk up to somebody and say, "I'm better than you. I live in this part of town." Most people don't even know where you live.
That. They say it as how they talk down their nose at you, or how they treat you, or... I mean, I'm just, you know, you sound a little sheltered there, Scott.
No, I'm just saying, I think that's something you have to internalize yourself, though, because let's say I meet some... If I am somebody, let's say I'm an arrogant person who talks down my nose to people. Okay, so if I meet somebody that I don't know, or I meet a coworker, I don't know where they live, they haven't told me where they live, if I talk to them down my nose, let's say they have more money and live in a better neighborhood than I do, I still condescended to them. But
we assume, but you're doing that because they're assuming something based on, kind of like what Naomi said. You know, Naomi has the means to, you know, she owns multiple properties and this and that, and she chooses to live where she chooses. There are people that would look at Naomi, in my opinion, that would look at Naomi and her choice to live where she lives and think she, you know, because she lives where she lives, she doesn't have much money. I would think the same would be said of Amy Orr Parker.
Right.
Peanut butter jelly truck.
Right, but I guess...
In my opinion, the fact that Amy Orr chooses to live where she could live, and because they can live where they want to. They make good money. They you know, they both work their income and stuff. She didn't abandon her neighborhood. She didn't abandon her roots. She didn't, as so many people do.
Right, but I guess if the criteria is where you live... Most people who would come in contact with either one of them have no idea where they live. They don't meet them on the porch. So how would I know?
You don't think people find out where people live today, Scott?
No, I'm sure they do, but I'm just saying, so I don't condescend to you until I find out where you live? You kind of broke up there. Try that again. We're breaking up there. Give us a call back. Something was going on with the phone. But give us a call back, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944.
How much do you know about like cell towers and stuff?
Well, a little bit.
Well, I mean, I'm just curious, because, like, there are just, like, spots that are just, like, dead zones. Like, you'll literally be on, like one portion of the road, and it works fine. You hit, like, the middle of the road, and there's just no connection at all. You hit the end of the road, and back to connection.
Yeah, call back in, because it was breaking up. If you listen to the replay, we couldn't hear anything. So call back in, and we can continue that. But I guess that's my question. How do you condescend to somebody if you don't know where they live, if that's what you're basing the condescension on?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you... I mean, the majority of the people you meet, how do you know their, class?
I mean, like... Well, that's what I'm saying. If I don't like you...
If I spend, like, $500 on groceries, I mean, I could just be feeding, a large family, and I'm broke because... I don't know. There's not really a way to gauge it.
Yeah, but what is the class system, is what I'm saying. Is it based on money? Is it based on where you live? Is it based on how you speak? Is it based upon... What is it?
I would figure it's probably more based on... Because, I mean, like, you, like a millionaire could live, you know, or, I mean, just about anywhere they want. But if they lived in, like, whatever is deemed the bad portion of town, I mean, they're still millionaires.
But don't you have to, because nobody's going to say, "I'm better than you." So isn't that something you have to feel yourself? Don't you have to feel that person thinks they're better than you? I mean, isn't that something coming more from you than from them? Or do they just flat out tell you?
Well, I mean, I don't think people flat out tell you, but I mean, I think that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a bit of both, I suppose. I mean, people can definitely talk down to you and, like, talk to you like you're dumb, I suppose. Like, talk to you like you're a kid. But, I mean, you know.
But what's that have to do with money? That, to me, has more to do with education.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think that has anything to do with money.
So, I guess I'm just confused on this whole thing.
I mean, I don't know. Like, again, maybe it happens. But I don't know. Like, I've never had somebody just, like, you know, oh, you drive that? Well, I drive a Lamborghini Urus. I mean, I don't know. It's just never happened.
No, I don't. Like I said, I don't know. Do I have to go find out the information on you before I can condescend?
Also,
and if I find out that you do have some money, I can't condescend to you? I mean, I'm fine with condescending to people who have millions of dollars if I think they're an awful person.
Well, I don't think you should be condescending people in general.
If somebody has a terrible attitude, if you want to condescend to them, go ahead.
No. If somebody has a terrible attitude,
see, now you're making judgments.
I generally tend to not mess with. I just don't talk to them.
Well, that's how you would handle it. Go ahead, caller.
All right, I'm going to be done after this. I have an example of a friend and I were just talking about this the other day. She and her husband had recently split up. She had next to nothing, and I can't remember how much she said she paid for the car. I'm thinking it was about $500 or $600, and it was rust on wheels and get in and pray, and there were some bungee cords and some duct tape, but it got her back and forth to work until she could, you know, do better for herself. And that's what she had to start out with, and she was out running around with some friends, and they went to, people rode with her, and they went to, I can't remember if it's someone's house or something like that. And then a friend with a nicer vehicle showed up, and they were all leaving for the next destination, and she refused to ride with the friend in the shitbag car, and then she refused to ride in the shitbag car going forward. There are people that are too good to be seen.
But see, I don't. Okay, but for an example, something I've seen recently, there's a guy, I believe he's in college, and he dresses like most college guys do who are going to class. He dresses, you know, t-shirt, I don't even know what the pants are called now, sweatpants, whatever, shorts, you know, nothing ever dressed up, and he had an important meeting.
Casually.
Yeah,
yes.
But he had an important meeting that he had to go to, at his job, and so he came in that day wearing a button-up shirt and black pants and a tie, and people made fun of him for that. He said, where are you going? Why are you all dressed up? Who are you trying to put on airs for? So this is more of a...
if you saw me in a suit, I own a couple of them. Wouldn't it look unusual to you when you're used to seeing me in my black stretch pants and a t-shirt that says something ridiculous?
Well, I think any change of clothing is abnormal, but I guess my point is, I think those are situational. I don't know if you're dressing the way you are because of the financial situation or because that's the way you want to dress. I don't know.
I can think of all kinds of actors and just famous people in general who dress like bums.
And when it comes to
Adam Sandler's a big one.
When it comes to old beat up cars, I mean, there are, you know, listen.
I love my paid for hoopty. Paid for.
But there you go. That's why you like it, because you own it outright, not because you couldn't afford another car.
Exactly.
So again, I'm not making that on a class distinction.
Okay, but there are people I'm sure that we've seen that, you know, their cars are a wing and a prayer, and I'll be honest that I judge them and think, well, their likelihood of insurance on that thing is next to nothing.
There are a lot of mechanics from a certain era whose cars are all just pieced together. That's what they
are. My son would love something like that. He would love, like, a hit and miss big old Dodge Dually 8 cylinder, paint faded. He would love that sort of thing. So,
right, but but again, that's just the job there.
His is insured.
Well, and how many mechanics and farmers who make really good money, you know, dress horribly and sometimes smell horribly because they've been in a job that is like that? You know, I don't know how we make these distinctions, I guess. I think what people are saying is a money distinction is more about choices people make in life. I mean, if you don't wear deodorant...
Exactly. But there are definitely social classes that we all keep the stereotypes in our minds, whether we want to or not, especially in marrying, you know, like food stamps. You must be poor. You must be lazy. You must whatever. How about you just have a job and can't get by even with your job? You know, most people don't consider that might be an option. Or, you know, stop having kids or all that, you know, that sort of stuff. But, so we all have stereotypes. But, hey, I just rolled up to Groovy Plants. It's my son's birthday. I'm always allowed to buy a really nice one for his birthday.
Well, happy birthday.
Not that I'm not allowed to buy them, but yes, this is my baby's last birthday as a minor.
Well, so
she's buying herself a nice plant.
Well, give him happy birthday wishes.
I will. Hey, we need one of those LMP cakes.
That's exactly right. Those are always good. Thank you.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. All right, phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. I just think these are more choices people make. I don't think they're so much financial decisions.
Yeah, I mean, yes, by and large, the majority of things are decisions. I mean, you got to do the things, I suppose.
But I don't think they're always based on money, is what I'm saying. I think they're based on what the person's interest is. If you're a car person, you probably love to get your car detailed. You love to get your car washed. You love to have a certain type of car. If you're not a car person, you probably don't care that much, as long as it goes down the road. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scott. I don't know if you cut me off or I cut myself off.
No, it was we lost you.
Okay. Yeah, you were cutting in and out.
I looked over and realized I was talking to myself. So, anyways, that's probably a good thing. Here's what I would ask a lot of the ladies out there listening. How many of you have got hooked up with these guys out here today that look good, they dress good? Man, you think they're studs and all that. And then you get hooked up with them, and guess who's buying all their clothes for them? You. You're buying the tools for them. They don't have a car. They live with their mommy. They don't work. They won't do shit around the house. And they don't even do their man stuff, and you find out they're on Grindr. I mean, that's the whole thing. And I guarantee you, because I see it in the world I walk in, you know, people after people after people go by what you wear, what you drive, and you're right, they don't know where you live yet.
Well, I mean, I think that's the whole first impressions are everything kind of thing.
Right, I think that's it. I think these people clearly don't have anything, and yet they look like they have something, so maybe when you meet them, you think they do, but that's the whole point that I'm trying to make is that what you see is not based on their financial situation. What you see is based on what you see.
Right, and I agree with you, and for me, I like when I worked with Habitat, I used to wear cut-off shirts. I used to go to the board meetings with, I'd cut the sleeves off my shirts. I'd cut the sleeves off my dress shirts because I knew it pissed one zooker off because she looked down at it. She thought it, you know, and I'm a blue-collar person. I'm a worker. If I'm out in my dress clothes and I got to change a tire, if I got to help you to change a tire, I'm not laying my coat down to cover, you know, so I'm going to come into whatever function I can, and my knees are going to be dirty because I get in and get my hands dirty. That's what some people care about. A lot of people care about just, you know, your looks or your what you're wearing or your status or what they think your status are because they're very superficial. There was a movie at one point called Shallow Hal. It played on this whole premise. You know, again, it's not an all or nothing thing. You know, there are people out there that I think look for the proper things in our spouses or our loved ones or whatever. I'm just saying, as an all or not an all or nothing person, that people make judgments today. People judge Naomi. People judge me by how I live or how they perceive, you know. My dad was the same way. My dad had good money. My dad traveled all over and all this. If you ever caught my dad on a weekend or something, he had a sweatshirt with sleeves cut off and some raggedy pants on and, you know, whatever. You'd never know that he had any money or any wealth. A lot of times, those who show it don't have it.
But something I've also noticed, right, but I think these, again, are all judgments, and I'm not saying that people don't judge. I'm just saying that I don't think it's based on an economic class system. I think it's based upon what people do and the choices they make. For example, somebody brought up Dan Clark earlier on here today. Well, he lives on Indiana Avenue. Well, apparently that is the affluent side of town. Now, I know many judgments have been made on Dan Clark. I've heard many snide comments were made about him, about the way he behaves, about the way he acts in front of the room, about his conduct on council, about how he talks toward people in a condescending way. Well, but not everybody feels that way. So
what's that got to do with affluent, though? So affluent I don't see your point.
Well, because it was my understanding, that's a judgment that people are making on him. I doubt that everybody feels that way about him, but that's a judgment that's laid on him because of actions he's taken, not because of how much money.
I think he acts like a person who doesn't understand he's a public servant. I think he acts like somebody who's got some importance over and above what the public gives him. I don't think saying anything to him in that fashion or way. I never knew where he lived. Associated anything because he was, for me, I just went by his conversations. I could pick up what area of town he lived in.
Right, but I guess my point is, of the people up there, you think he is the most condescending, but do you think of the people sitting up there, he's the most, he's the richest?
Well, no.
Okay, so there we go. Proves the point. His attitude, which
I guess I'm confused by all that. Cause see, I don't operate on that premise.
So how do you organize your classes?
I understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying I don't operate on the premise. You know, so it's difficult for me to wrap my mind around because I've never talked to Danny Clark in any fashion or way that had a beginning or came from what I thought he thought was his status of being better or more wealthy than anybody.
Right, but I don't think it is that. That's what I'm trying to figure out the haves and the have-nots, which is what I keep hearing, and it seems to be...
He has more. He puts himself in the haves. I think there are people, here's my opinion of Twyla Lang. I don't know where she lives, and yet I can surmise and all this. Some people gravitate to fame or gravitate to people they think have fame or whatever. I think Twyla was a disgruntled employee when she worked in the billing, utility billing. I think she got caught, tape recording her fellow co-workers. Then she got involved with the administration. It makes her feel important. Now she's, the auditor? I don't know. They switch things around. They trade the jobs however they want to. They don't care about how the voters vote. But she's very much about, If you go back and look at some of the videos when she was still on council, and you used to talk about it on the show,
yes.
Is she in the administration or is she on council?
Absolutely.
She was all about we, and she was all about, she'd sit right there and answer, because everything that she put came out of her mouth, she was running it through by, she'd glance over at Bill Collins and the admin and say, am I okay? Am I good? Mary Stoneburner does the same damn thing.
Right, but I guess my question, something interesting about Twyla, since we've went on to her now, is that when she was on council, yes, there was a lot of talk about that. But since she's became treasurer, as you said, that makes her feel more important, and now she's in a different position. But yet, I've heard also the same people say, well, she doesn't say anything anymore. She doesn't remark about anything.
Any damn questions. I mean, the only person that even goes even close is either Naomi somewhere or Aaron Rollins.
Right, but I mean her attitude...
You can sit there and watch Twyla, especially when she first got into that seat. You can sit there and just watch her body language. Man, she is just hoping to get through that meeting, and nobody asked her the question because she sure as hell don't want her feet held to the same fire that she held others.
But then,
and I don't have a big issue with her holding people's feet to the fire. I think she took it to a level of it being a farce in a show.
Well, I guess that's my point then, because when she was on council, a lot of people made remark about how she talked to people and how she condescended to people and how she acted. But the second she stopped condescending to people and showed that she had insecurities and does not speak to people, well, people jump on her for that. So darned if you do, darned if you don't.
No, she just shut the hell up because she got in there and she probably... You know what? The grass is always greener on the other side. She got into that job and she saw really what the hell was going on there, that Miranda... I think Miranda made mistakes. But you know what? They went to her and asked her to run originally. They knew she didn't have the qualifications. They knew Robert Landon didn't have the qualifications. And then they turned on him. And then they turned on Miranda. And I guarantee you, at some point, they'll turn on Twyla. They eat their own. Twyla is in there. I mean, when Miranda was still in there, let Miranda say, I don't know. And she said it. And she said it loud. She owned it. If she didn't know it, she said, and I think she could have done better. But Twyla said, you know, if Twyla says I don't know, or the new treasurer, or whatever her name is, says I don't know, there isn't all of this. Where are those people?
Right, but I guess that comes back to the original question where we started was the class system in Marion. It sounds to me like the most condescending people live in the wrong neighborhoods and don't have the money that people have. I mean, I heard people sing the praises of Lois Fisher recently. Well, I'm sure Lois has got more money than Dan Clark or Twyla Lang, yet she's not considered condescending like they are. So, again, I don't think it has anything to do with finances.
Lois has got some brains. Lois uses her head. Lois learns how to speak to people and trust and believe. I guarantee you, Lois can lower the boom on you. She can get ugly with her words. I guarantee that. Lois didn't grow up with a ton of money in her family and all that.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is, where does the condescension come from with Dan Clark and Twyla Lang if they're not living on the right side of town and have the right kind of money?
You'd have to ask Dan Clark. Like I said, he got in there. I don't know. What's the clerk's name? Pollock?
Yeah, Pollock, yeah.
Okay. There was a time where Pollock would consistently talk down his nose to people up there when he's sitting next to Stoneborough or when he was in the committee. He liked to get an attitude and talk to the people like that. And I've made this comment multiple times online and on your show, and he has changed his whole attitude. He has kind of started changing how he addresses people.
Right,
so you learn from it.
Right,
I think as Dan Clark tried to tell me, we run this city. No, you don't. You were given a job. The people allowed you and hired you to do a job, and you, Mr. At Large, you don't even want to listen to those people.
Right.
It would be different if Dan Clark was a ward council person and he was only responsible for his own people, and he, you know, is in the Indiana Street Avenue area, so he wouldn't have to deal with the riffraff that, you know, he doesn't like to deal with. But he's an at-large position, and he chose to run for that. So he has to deal with the rich, the poor, the scum, the this, whatever.
Right, but I guess that's where
why he talks down his nose. I'd be happy, and I have asked him, why do you talk down your nose to people?
Right,
who the hell do you think you are?
Right, but I guess that's my confusion here is, I'm trying to figure out what the difference is between the one group, the haves or the have-nots, or the people who have money or the people who don't have money. What is the class system based on? Because all the people we've talked about are, some have money, some don't. Some live on the right side of town, some don't live on the
and
right side of town.
There's exceptions to every rule, Scott. I keep going down that road that I'm not all or nothing. There is no just the haves and just the have-nots. There's always going to be the middle, just like there's the left and the right, and you have independents. So you're always going to have people that are the fringe. that are leaning this direction, that direction. As you get new acquaintances and you grow in life and you go, I mean, I think your perspectives change. Sometimes your goals change. Some of us don't.
Right, which is what
some
I said.
Some of us have the same core belief system our whole life.
Which is
and
what
we just learn about life. Some people, you know, my ex-wife, she changes with every guy she's married to. And she's into rock and roll, or she's into this, and she's into tattoos, or no, tattoos are no good no more, that's scum. And, you know, homosexuality's okay, oh, no, we're the new guy ain't into that. So, and I tell her, why don't you just be you? Why don't you just be you and find somebody that wants you to be with you?
But that's the premise that I started with this morning by saying, I don't care where somebody lives. I don't care how much money they make. I have to meet you to decide if you're a nice person or not. That's it. That's what I'm basing it on.
Okay, but that's you, Scott, and I'm the same with you. I don't care either. But do you believe that's the way most of the people in the world, or the majority, or a high number, do you think that's how they roll?
Well, I don't know, because I'm trying. That's what I'm trying to get to the bottom
well,
of here.
Is
what's the
observation? Is what I'm trying to ask. I'm asking
is that my
your
opinion?
No,
honestly, because I couldn't tell you the people who are not my family. I don't know where most of them live. I don't know how much money's in their bank account. I don't know. I don't think they're condescending or treating anybody up or down on any of that, because I don't know what their situation is to begin with.
Okay. Well, I don't think condescending part of it is directly linked with, I guess to me, you're trying to link it directly with you're either a have or a have not when you talk down your nose to somebody. You know, there's plenty of people that are poor as shit, but they think they got it going on, that they're gaming the system, they're on every hip and heap and welfare and this and that, and they got nice cars because they scam everything. And they think they act like, that's why it's called fake it to make it. And so on that level, you're going to get people that are on that side of the tracks or that end of town or whatever that are going to talk condescending, because they think, in my opinion, that's what a lot of the Trumpers are. A lot of the Trumpers, the people, the Trumpets that voted for him, are fake it to make it people.
Well,
you know, they're voting Republican, and they're on welfare, they're on checks, they're scamming the system, they're selling their fucking pills, they're doing all that, they're scamming Heap and all of that, they're scamming Snap, they're selling their cars, and I know I'm going to piss people off, but those same people that are going to get pissed off, they know I'm telling the damn truth.
Well, I'll tell you something interesting. One time, and I think this story rings true, there was the daughter of somebody who would have been considered a very well-known personality in town, so people would have thought very highly of them. They certainly would not have thought of this person as a have-not. They would have thought of them as a have, but the daughter found herself in a very precarious situation and was told, you're making the family look bad. Okay, well, the daughter is part of the family. She is a have, but because of her situations and her choices, she was seen as an undesirable person. So that's what I'm coming back to. I don't think it's based on money. I don't think it's based on what your last name is. I don't think it's based on who your family is. Matter of fact, I think sometimes that can hurt you more. Like in this particular situation, because this person's last name was something that people would recognize, and they knew that this person was the daughter of someone they would recognize, that was considered more horrific than it would have been for somebody who was...
Let me tell you a story. Imagine that. When I worked with Marion Matters, I was a facilitator for Marion Matters, and we went into the prisons, and we facilitated the getting ahead while you're getting out curriculum. And we used to go around and speak around at different, you know, lawyer symposiums and all that. Like when we spoke at the Rotary Club one time by the palace. And they were having a buffet ahead of it. And I was in line to go to the buffet. Two business owners, don't even know who they are, but they were standing in front of me waiting in line. And one said, you know, hey, are you, because we, part of our spiel was Mitch Lipster, and there's other people that were in the program that were convicted felons. and we were pushing the take the question, are you a convicted felon, off of the employment application so that it wasn't an automatic, you know, circular file toss with your application. You know, we were trying to make it so that, you know, you take that off and you give people a chance who've come out of prison, who've come out of their, you know, paid their price to society, and they don't want to be on welfare, and they don't want to be on assistance, and they want to work. But you got to let them work. So we were there for that, to push that. And one of the business owners said to the other business owner, so you're ready for this? They're going to try to convince us why we should hire felons. And the other business owner said, you know what you do with felons? And he made a gun thing with his fingers and put it up to his head, and he said, pow. Well, when he did that, the first businessman kind of noticed me or was aware of me standing behind and kind of knew I was with the group that was going to speak. And he made the comment to the man, like, hey, I think this was one of them, man. Shut up. I didn't say anything. I went on up through, and I got up and spoke. And as I got up to speak, you know me, I go off on tangents. And I looked out in that crowd, and I looked out and saw him, and I said, you know what? There's people in the crowd tonight that are going through things, and they think they're going through it alone. They think they're going through things that only they're going through, and they're so ashamed of it. And they've got a son, daughter, grandson, or something that's caught up in addiction, and they're embarrassed by it. And I'm here to tell you that every other person in this room is touched by this. Every single person in the room, one way or another. And when you get caught up in that shame and you try to hide it and you think you're in it alone, that's what that demon of addiction and heroin and all of that does. That's how it keeps it going, because you're afraid to seek help. You're afraid to even talk to your friends about it. And I said my spiel, got done, and we, you know, we're over. At the end of it, you know, we're hanging out, people are talking, and that man, the same man who came up there and, you know, made the gun thing and said, you shoot him, said, I owe you an apology. He said, I have a family member, and this is making me emotional. I have a family member that's caught up in addiction. And he said, we think that just, you know, nobody's going through this. I had family members of my own caught up in addiction. I'm an addict. So, you know, this man realizing, but see, a few minutes earlier, he was talking down his nose. A few minutes earlier, you see where I'm going with all this, Scott?
Right, right, and you're right. I think it becomes situational.
So I think we as people got to quit taking these. I mean, I'm very big on standing on beliefs. You put them out there and you stand strong on them. We have to be willing to listen to other opinions, perspectives. We have to be willing to, and not just shut the hell up while they talk at you. Listen to them. You know, absorb that. And you know what? You don't always, when you listen to somebody, you don't always have to respond. Maybe just, you know, consume that and sit on that for a minute, and then and ponder it. But we got to quit fighting with each other, everybody. We got to work together. We got to find solutions.
Right. I think
all in the same fights. It doesn't matter whether we live on this side of the track, that side of the tracks. I've been fortunate enough because of my upbringing. I was raised in a very, very blue-collar house by my mom, a single mom. I had a half-brother, half-sister. Their dad wasn't anything in their life. My mom had multiple rental properties. My mom's a strong female and stands up to this day. My mom's 80-something years old and works harder than most people work today. My dad was a college grad and was a superintendent with State Farm. So I was able to see I was able to be a have and a have not. That's why I'm so passionate about everything that I do and say. So the solution is here. If you walk left or you walk right, you're going to walk in left or right hand circles. You got to walk a little left and a little right to walk down the middle of the road. Let's keep it down the middle. Let's keep it between the ditches, people.
Well, and that's why I agree. We only have 10 seconds left, but is that the less lines and the less divisions we draw on our own, the more we are going to get along. I think when we say this person's part of this group, this person's part of that group, I think that creates a wall.
And I just, don't put you in groups. I listen to your words. I would encourage everybody to take the picture of the person out of your head. If you can find some way to listen to people's words and not know who it is, because those words are the words. I'm not saying you don't want to match them with the person and you don't want to watch and look people in the eyes. I'm not saying that at all. But we sometimes get caught up on who the words are coming out of, the mouth of. And if it's our friend, okay, we believe it. If it isn't our friend, then it's not good.
I think that's right. Hey, we're running out of time. We'll be back after this short but important break. Don't go anywhere.
Go back to Abraham Lincoln when it's the, you bring your enemies close.
That was, had you ever seen a primary?